This podcast was recorded Thursday, September 28th at 11:35 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Like both Donald Trump and Joe Biden will stand on a table in a factory and defiantly hold union signs over their heads, just like Sally Field did in the movie Norma Rae. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those snollygosters, those shrewd politicians who stand with unions and also take corporate campaign donations. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, the Ohio redistricting drama ends and the Democrats are on board. Surprise, surprise. But first, early voting in Ohio begins in less than 2 weeks, and the normally sleepy odd-year election will feature more than candidates for city council and mayor. Issue number one on the minds of voters and on the ballot is the proposed abortion rights amendment. If passed, it would prohibit the state from regulating or banning abortion until the point of fetal viability. After that, abortion would be legal only when the mother's life or health is in danger. The campaign has really yet to get going, but Ohio is not the first state to have such a vote. Michigan went through this just last year. Citizens put a proposed amendment on the ballot that is very similar to Ohio's proposed amendment, and in November of last year, Michigan voters approved it by a 57-43% margin. Here to talk about what happened in Michigan last year, what that campaign was like, and perhaps give us a clue as to what to expect over the next 6 or 7 weeks, is a longtime Michigan political journalist and observer. Zoe Clark is the political director at Michigan Radio, the public radio network that serves the state up north. Zoe, welcome to Snollygoster.
Hello, down south, I should say, Mike.
That's right, the state down south. You guys call us that?
No, we don't even call it. Ohio isn't even on our minds. That's isn't right. That how this whole like thing is supposed to go? You know, we're like, I'm in Ann Arbor, right? With like Michigan Wolverines, yes. Too. So it's like, it's a big deal.
Yeah. A little too big sometimes. Anyway, let's run down the Michigan Amendment. It established an individual's right to reproductive care, to abortion care. It allowed the state to regulate abortion after fetal viability, except if needed to protect the patient's life, physical or mental health. And it forbids the state from prosecuting anyone exercising the rights contained in the amendment. This is very similar to what Ohio is going to vote on.
Yes, right. So exactly. And this is based on the fact that Michigan had a law on the books, a 1931 law that criminalized abortion in the state. And as we remember, when everyone was sort of waiting to see what the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court, was going to do vis-a-vis Roe v. Wade, a group of folks known as Reproductive Freedom for All decided, hey, we want to get, you know, ahead of this, and actually started to gather signatures for this constitutional amendment even before the Dobbs decision.
So that's interesting. It started before Dobbs.
It did. It did. In January, in fact, of 2022. And it was a group of folks. And, you know, Governor Gretchen Whitmer, Democratic Governor Gretchen Whitmer, has for a very long time been a proponent of reproductive freedom. I mean, for more than a decade, going back to her time as the minority leader in the state Senate. And so this is something that she's always, you know, campaigned on, talked about, and really was actually one of the first governors in the country, I think, who really was bringing up the issue of what would happen, you know, if again, Roe v. Wade were no longer. Yeah. And she specifically brought that up in Michigan because there was still this 1931 law on the books.
Yeah. And of course, the difference here is we have a Republican governor, Mike DeWine, who is very much opposed to abortion rights.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a different dynamic.
Exactly.
Different dynamic in Michigan.
Exactly. And what's so fascinating, too, and we can talk about this if you'd like, which is the fact that she was also running for re-election last year at the same time as this ballot, you know, question was up for voters as well.
Yeah. We'll get to that in a moment. What was the main message of supporters of the amendment?
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty clear, reproductive freedom for all. This idea that people should be in charge of their reproductive freedom, whether it's about abortion or whether it's about birth control. And again, part of it too, the as you mentioned, quote, forbid prosecution of individuals exercising the established right and those folks who are helping folks. And it became a huge rallying cry among voters. In fact, in the end, and you have to turn in, a valid number of signatures. And when Reproductive Freedom for All, the group turned in the signatures, this was in July of 2020. So, a summer ago, they turned in a historic number, the most amount of signatures for any single question, that has ever made it onto the ballot in Michigan history. And so, you saw folks, I mean, at grocery stores holding, getting their clipboards and getting signed at farmers markets. I mean, it really became an all-out effort. And you saw that with, again, the historic number of signatures that were turned in to get the question on the ballot.
That's very similar to what happened here in Ohio. They needed 414,000 signatures. They got around 700,000, but they easily cleared the number they needed of valid signatures to get on the ballot. So that was the message of the supporters of this. Did opponents of abortion rights have a main message? Because in Ohio, it has been muddled.
Yeah, I mean, when I use the word muddled, I don't know that I would say muddled and maybe more, and I'm even hesitant to say scare tactics necessarily, but it was definitely, I mean, some of the messages were that this would repeal the requirement for minors to receive parental consent in order to receive an abortion. So that was a big one, right? That, and I'm quoting here, I'm not saying this myself, but young children would be able to go and get abortions without their parents ever knowing that.
Same as being argued here. That is, I think, probably the primary argument that abortion rights foes are using here in Ohio, the parental rights. We do have a law on the books that requires parental consent, and they say this amendment would nullify that.
Interesting. And that's exactly what's happening or what was happening here. Another was that it would basically repeal any kind of safety standards or inspections of abortion clinics, right? Again, this idea that there wouldn't it wouldn't be safe or even, clean or something like that was another one. And then there was this really sort of odd one where it was like that the proposal would allow, quote, any attending healthcare professional to perform an abortion. And the definition under state law of a healthcare professional includes like a masseuse. Now, there was no one in Reproductive Freedom for All who was arguing that a masseuse should suddenly be able to perform an abortion. So, when I say scare tactics, I want to be clear that there are some people who just fundamentally were against this ballot proposal, which of course that is, what is allowed in a democratic society. But going deeper than this, and so some of this language, was used and in the end didn't scare enough people to vote against it.
I read that there were some arguments that the Michigan Amendment would, by arguments by opponents to this change, would invalidate laws pertaining to prostitution, statutory rape, and even laws that ban human cloning. Do you?
Gosh, oh, I hadn't heard the human cloning yet, or maybe I did and I just already forgot it. Yeah, I mean, and this is what I mean, and look, I mean, look, this is a politics podcast, right? Like, people who are against something are going to go to the mats to try to get people to vote no. But, when you're just misinterpreting a law or, misinterpreting the language, it's just a whole nother step in the conversation.
And the other one here is, I'm sure it was used up there as well, is the so-called late-term abortions
Yes.
up till birth, which
Yes.
we have fact-checked backwards and forwards that it simply does not
Yes.
happen. And
Right.
our current law, which is on hold, but our current law that bans abortion after about 6 weeks also includes the health exception to abortions or ending a pregnancy after fetal viability. Here in Ohio, abortion opponents are divided. They really are. Some want abortion banned completely from the point of conception on. They are on the far, far right. They think abortion is murder and it should be banned completely. No exceptions. Others suggest it should be allowed for exceptions should be allowed for rape or incest. Others suggest maybe even should be allowed up to a certain point in a pregnancy, 10, 12, 15 weeks. Did that sort of division within the abortion rights opponents camp happen in Michigan?
You know, it's a good question. It really was because it was just such a large ballot question, right? Again, the interpretation, and again, because the opponents could say, well, if you interpret it the law XYZ, it means this, you know, drastic, dramatic thing is going to happen. Because it was so encompassing, it really was much more about, again, the opponents of the law saying all of these things could happen rather than conversations with supporters with, like, what is the line that you would draw? Yeah. And there were a lot of questions actually during this campaign for Governor Whitmer, who again was a huge proponent of Proposal 3. And really, you know, one of the things that her kind of go-to line was, I'm going to fight like hell, you know, for reproductive rights. She now, we should note, has a fight like hell pack, you know, that she runs. But really, I mean, the question sort of ended up being asked of Democrats, like, where is that line, right? Is it, you know, 20 weeks? Is it, you know, this many weeks? But there was not always answers to those questions, or the answer would often be, I believe that's between a person and their healthcare professional, their health, you know, care person who they go to, who knows these things much more than anybody who, you know, writes a law. And so really the Reproductive Freedom for All became, I would say, more of this sort of all-encompassing idea about freedom of one's bodies than it did about kind of, you know, this line versus this line versus this date on a calendar. Yeah.
And that's kind of what's happened here. The folks who are supporting of this amendment really kind of avoid the word abortion. They call it reproductive health care, women's health care. They talk about privacy and personal decisions, and they use the word abortion, but it's definitely not in the top of their talking points. So again, it just shows you the emotional aspects of this issue that the voters are going to decide here. There was a lot of money spent on this campaign. That was a midterm, so you had other campaigns going. So what kind of ads were out there? What kind of money was spent on advertising for
it? So money was definitely spent, but I'll tell you, you know, the other thing was, you know, and we all remember what it was like last year. I mean, there was so much fervor and passion on both sides of the issue, mind you, but in Michigan particularly, I mean, the Reproductive Freedom for All, there were times where, you know, people were trying to get a sign to put in their front yard and they couldn't find signs because, you know, they were flying off the shelves. But yep. I mean, it was powerful to see. And again, I mean, the numbers prove that out in terms of the signatures, again, the historic number. You know, I remember witnessing, you know, campaign events with the governor where, I mean, women were coming up to her wearing the Reproductive Freedom for All t-shirts and putting their children and, you know, their babies in her arms and asking, you know, to get photos taken. So, you know, I don't want to say like money speaks, we know that, but I think particularly surrounding this issue, you know, I'm sort of curious, like, how much money even needed to be spent, because, you know, word of mouth, and again, the passion that was seen.
Yeah, we raised, not we, but the state of Ohio, the two campaigns raised $37 million and spent $37 million dollars on the first Issue 1 campaign. That was the ballot vote we had in August that would have,
just weeks ago,
if passed, would have required a 60% majority to get this thing passed, but that failed basically by almost a 60-40 margin. What has happened since? Has there been movement in the legislature to try to ease abortion restrictions, to tighten abortion restrictions since the amendment passed? What's been going on at the State House?
Well, it's a great question. So very early on, and what we should note too is this dynamic that happened, and because you saw this groundswell, right? So many, particularly, I would say, you know, Democratic voters come out. Michigan actually became under Democratic control for the first time in nearly 40 years.
And you also changed how you draw the districts, which helped as well.
Exactly. So it really was this confluence of all of these events that after the latest census, we had in the previous election, voters had approved an independent redistricting commission, which redrew maps. So we had redrawn maps, and we had actually three ballot measures, one about, again, reproductive freedom for all, one having to do with term limits and financial disclosures for the state legislature, and then a third allowing early voting and some other voting reforms. So there was a groundswell of Democratic voters who turned out, and again, for the first time in nearly 40 years, state House, state Senate, and the executive office, the governor's office, all went Democratic. So Democrats basically came out with this sort of agenda. I mean, literally bullet point agenda of the things that they wanted to do and that they were going to do basically in their first, you know, 100 days, then their first 6 months. And one of them was the repeal of the 1921 law. And that happened very quick off the bat. Now, after, you know, the sort of, you know, all of the things, right, the repeal of right to work and all of these things, now they're actually digging into some of the more like interesting things that are like, well, Medicare, should Medicare cover abortion and insurance riders for, you know, abortion? And what we're seeing right now is there is one Democratic representative who is not getting behind a package of bills, nearly a dozen bills. And it's actually just happened over the past couple of weeks, this new package of bills introduced. And so, you know, what early on was a definitely big Democratic win, now that we're getting a little bit deeper into some of these specific laws, you're seeing at least right now one Democrat break away from her caucus and saying she's not necessarily going to vote in favor of some of this legislation.
Mm-hmm. Now there's very different here in Ohio. We have a legislature completely dominated by Republicans.
Yeah.
We have Republicans dominate statewide offices. The talk is that they might try to go to the ballot again if this abortion rights amendment passes. Any talk in Michigan of going back to the voters on this, or did the margin of victory for this amendment scare people away?
Yeah, I mean, when you're talking about the margin of victory that you did for something like this and the amount of money and the millions and millions of dollars and then the turnout that you saw, I just haven't heard anything from folks saying, you know, let's try this again. I don't think there's an appetite. And, you know, I think there's, you know, I mean, we're going to also see what happens in 24, right? Mm-hmm. Vis-a-vis abortion rights in other states and what it looks like. You know, we haven't had a presidential election since Dobbs, but no, I mean, there may be people who are talking about it, but there's certainly not any kind of organized effort right now to go back to the ballot and try to, you know, redo Proposal 3.
Interesting. Proposal 3, that was Michigan's abortion rights amendment, which passed with roughly 57% of the vote last year. Very similar to Ohio's Issue 1, which voters will start voting on in a couple of weeks when early voting begins. Thanks to Zoe Clark, political director for Michigan Radio, for giving us an idea of what happened in Michigan and how it's similar and how it might preview what's going to happen here in the coming weeks. Zoe, thanks for joining us on Snollygoster.
Oh, Mike, it was so great to talk to you.
We'll be right back.
Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now, we're taking center stage. Introducing NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of Black-led stories from NPR's podcasts. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.
Remember when we scoffed at Republican and State Senate President Matt Huffman when he said the latest attempt to draw state legislative maps would be bipartisan?
The map's not going to look like it does now. The map that we have now is not the map that anybody, well, I shouldn't say any, I think probably anybody on the commission wanted. It was a map that was twice removed from a bad Supreme Court decision, at least bad in my opinion.
Well, Matt Huffman showed us. It turns out Republicans and Democrats can agree on state legislative maps. In a surprise late-night meeting on Tuesday, the Ohio Redistricting Commission unanimously approved maps for the Ohio House and the Ohio Senate districts. The maps still give Republicans an advantage. In theory, Republicans would win 62% of the House seats and 70% of the Senate seats. But the two Democrats on the panel, House Minority Leader Allison Russo and Senate Minority Leader Nikki Antonio, voted for them. Neither seemed all that pleased, but they said it is the best they could do. Voting rights advocates are not happy, and instead of just blasting Republicans for creating unfair maps, they are now blasting Democrats. And they say it only furthers their case that redistricting should not be in the hands of politicians. So here is where we stand. Barring any court decisions or last-minute changes, because these maps were approved on a bipartisan basis, they are good for 8 more years. That's until the next census and next official redistricting process. But, of course, that might not hold, because advocates for a 15-member non-political commission continue to try to get the issue on the ballot for next November. It's time now for our Snollygoster of the Week Award, where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the past 7 days. And this week, we give it to Matt Maher. Matt who? Exactly. Matt Maher was the first candidate for Ohio governor in 2026. He announced his candidacy back in February, almost 4 years before voting. He is a conservative policy researcher. And now he is the first candidate to drop out of the race for Ohio governor. On his blog, he says he has not seen the groundswell of support needed to take on the Republican establishment. He cited lackluster turnout to campaign events and trouble attracting social media followers. You have to give the guy credit for jumping into the race. You also have to give him credit for seeing the writing on the wall. But still, for running for governor well before anyone else is running is certainly shrewd. So Matt Maher earns our Snollygoster of the Week. That'll do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster, which is part of the NPR network. As always, please be sure to leave us a good review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast, and just tell your friends about us. For our student producer, Katie Genius, our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.